I'm not speaking for the other two guys. My Uncle Dan would never think of doing anyone in like that. You know, this is the way the native people seem to be. Some of them, not all of them. They're forever, you know, blaming each other. Why don't they take each other to court, you know, right at the time, instead of coming out with something like that, talking behind people that are dead, you know. Oh my, I don't think it's nice. Whether I said to my son Douglas, I said, Douglas, I says, there's got to be something wrong with that Emma Michelle to be talking like that, I says to him. She's either going senile, eh, for to be talking like that, to especially blame my Uncle Dan. Well, that's your dad's uncle too, eh? But, oh my gosh. Junior, if people didn't jump into things like that, come out and accuse each other like that, you know, there's going to be a better world among us people, like, eh? You're young, you probably, you know, don't hear anything like that, but this apparently goes on all the time. See, Doug was going to bring this up, so he went to see a lawyer in Smithers. They said, we don't want to have anything to do with anything like that, this lawyer had said. Because this goes on among the native people all the time. He told him there's quite a number of them that come in here trying to take one another to court. But we feel it's without foundation and it's not true anyway, you know. So, you know, that came up, I don't think it has come up yet, eh? And your dad probably will hear something like that. But whoever advised Douglas said, that's without foundation and nothing will come of it. They'll only throw it out anyway, you know. Nothing will come of it, he said. But he wanted to have satisfaction, but it didn't work out, though. See, it's just like these, it's something like, you know, you don't have to write this down, this witchcraft business. She died of loneliness, see? Mm-hmm. We're used to it, you know, it's... okay for us, but with old people, you can't uproot them and change their environment.
After they've been used to a way of life.
Right. Uh-huh. Say, dear mother, we used to send her to the hairdresser one time. It's quite a ways from where we lived. We asked this taxi operator to pick her up and bring her back, but he didn't bring her right home. He picked her up at the hairdresser and dumped her way out in the middle of nowhere. The only reason she found the place was right at the corner of 4th Avenue in Vancouver, 4th and Trafalgar. There were these big heavy equipment working there, and she's seen them there. This is the only reason why she found the place. He dumped her off way out in the middle of nowhere before Kitsilano High School there, way in the back somewhere. So she said she wandered up to the hill. She figured it was miles. And she figured I should try and look around and see. You know, when you can't read and write, it's not easy. So I'm sure whoever this man that did that to my mother didn't understand. They maybe figured all Indians are smart these days, you know. My mother wasn't fooled by any way, but she couldn't remember the house number, eh? And she said she wandered and wandered. My gosh, we were just ready to send for a search, you know, by the police. All of a sudden, she comes about, eh? Doug started looking for her, too. It scared him because he was looking for a job that day. Why he couldn't take her. He was to go for an interview. He was to go for an interview at that electrical place down by Richmond when that happened. But I'll never forget that, you know. She wondered, my gosh, it was just about, she left before lunch and she didn't finally find the spot until just about supper time, about 5:45. You know, she's got awful sore legs, you know, and wander all over like that. This is what my mother used to say. This is how white people are. That's white. She used to say that's white man's heart. You know, if it was an Indian, they'd never let you off any old place like that. An Indian, she used to say, has a good heart, good caring heart, because an Indian has been trained by the grandparents to be that way, to make sure that, you know, everything would run the best, you know, best they can. They'd run things the best they can. But it's too bad, you know, that happened. So, there's a lot of people had started up over the village, you know, tell me, Felix George, he was a Nootsani, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, Nootsanis are the same. We speak the same lingo. The only thing is they speak a little faster, eh? Much faster. My mother used to understand them very good. Me, not every word, but quite a bit. I used to speak to Louise's mama. She was a beautiful lady, nice thing. So, another party that came into Hagriget was the Tings.
Oh, yeah.
You like Willie Sims' parent, eh? His mom. And then another party that were excellent workers, old man Ting cleared all that land down there. A lot of the land was cleared previously by other people, like Hagriget. I see it's growing in from the back way there. It's growing in quite a bit now. Well, we're doing the same thing here. But we want privacy. That's the only reason why we let it grow up. At Hagriget, see, they came from Mansion Creek. She's, Mrs. Ting is from, she's originally Babine, eh?
Uh-huh.
And they came to Hagriget there and they set up a settlement there too. And her previous husband used to be a gold miner in Mansion Creek. That was the gold mine day those days. and old man Ting also. That's to what I heard, it wasn't Sims. In Chinese, it sounded more like Sem, but they translated into Sims, into English. Mm-hmm. Like, they came to Heaven Gate. I used to see Mrs. Ting used to. She used to have gold all over, gold nuggets. She used to have all over. She saved a lot of that gold, apparently, from where they used to work, mining gold. The first husband died, so she married into old man Ting. So they set up a farm over there, and they really worked hard too. They had chickens, and they had pigs, you know, and cattle, horses, you name it, they had it all. And they used to work from morning till dark, eh? They were hard, very hard working people. And old man Ting used to work on the section, on the CN, eh? So before he went to work in the morning, he used to go down to the canyon to get fish for her.
Uh-huh.
And pack it all up, have it all ready for her, then go to work. So not too many people can do that.
No, not
too many people. I know I, even when I was healthy, I wouldn't be able to do that, no. Then Kim and Donald Gray were the hardest working people over there those days. So this is how old man Ting had made his money. And then his son, Willie Sims, took over. He got him on the section, you know, got him on the, working on the section. As soon as he became old enough to work, Willie Sims started working. Well, that's his stepson. And then they raised Joe Sebastian. He did the same thing. He was a hard-working man. He used to do the same thing. He used to catch salmon before he went to work in the morning, and then on to work, because they showed him what to do and all that. And Joe used to work on the farm for them, you know, and he did many things before he went to work. Now I see Jack Sebastian is doing that now.
Mm-hmm.
Those days, Walter, my brother, worked on the section too. They all worked on the section. But Walter, he had too big of a family, so he didn't take interest in, you know, farming and that. I think he had enough work as it was. He worked hard, very hard in these days. And then, you know, he tried to bring his children up right too, so that they'll be self-sufficient. And in the early years, he had a couple of trucks too, dump trucks, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But he had been awful unlucky with those trucks. They were forever breaking down. We used to see him in his garage. He just about lived in his garage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing he went into the house for was to sleep, that's all. But he used to see him in and out of that garage. I used to say to my mother, oh, poor man, you think he'd try and take it easy, mother? No, he can't do it, she says. He's not happy unless, you know, he's replacing something in those trucks, or he's not happy unless he's doing that.
Mucking up his trucks.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah. He's still doing it.
Yeah. It's always him in there with some of these old vehicles.
He's always at it, yeah. Work, yeah.
Maybe you could tell me, about trapping? Did you do any trapping?
Oh, I did little trapping too, Junior. I did that too. I did a little trapping back here. I bought 83 acres of land from Goodridge, yeah?
Uh-huh.
And at most of the land was at the back of the tracks. So it's all I ever caught mostly is squirrels, though.
Oh, yeah.
I think just a few weasels. And one time I caught one beaver, eh? And then someone said, oh, you're in Sylvester territory, eh? So someone told me, Sylvester took that trap out and hung it up. But I continued on trapping. One beaver I caught in my life, yeah. But I gave it to the old lady. They like eating it. I would never eat beaver meat, you know. Anyway, when we lived back there at the Goodridge's ranch there, I used to watch for the moose when it comes through the tracks in the fall,
mm-hmm.
when, you know, they start mating. And one year, I used to saw all my own wood those days. I was sawing wood out under the woodshed. All of a sudden I seen this big moose running up around the bend, eh? Around the bend. So I had a big rifle there. We used to call it 38 government. I guess it's 38 Winchester. Anyway, I saw the big moose running up, so I loaded the rifle quick-like and the window, you can slide it open, eh?
Uh-huh.
So I slid the window open and prepared for it. Shot it right here. He jumped, as soon as I shot him, he jumped straight up and into the creek. And as he's falling into the creek, he got tangled up with the CN fencing. And that was it, eh? So from there, I said, "Oh my gosh, how am I gonna pull him out of there?" So what I did was make a run for Donald Gray's team of horses and brought them back with me. And Pete was just a little boy those days, eh? My brother Pete. And what we did was pull the big moose out of the creek and get the old people to butcher it and I think I kept a couple of pieces. There's no such thing as fridge those days. So they skinned it and dressed it right there by the creek, and brought it back to the village. And the next year, this time I was watching out for the moose. Like, the same thing happened. I loaded my gun, and this time I ran outside and aimed at this other one. Isn't it funny? As I shot, I could see a splatter of blood, eh?
Uh-huh.
And shot him. But he didn't drop this one. He kept running, eh?
Uh-huh.
So I seen big blotches of blood all along, as far as the curve. And then I couldn't see him anymore, eh? Oh, I used to run fast those days, my gosh. And there was nothing, eh?
Uh-huh.
And isn't it funny, you know, not very long after that, I met up with Willie Wilson. And Willie Wilson told me he found that moose. He just jumped across that creek further up, and he had died there.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the meat is not good. He found it about over a week later, eh?
Uh-huh.
So that was the second moose I shot, eh? But anyways, the first moose, I used to have a very high-powered radio those days where I could get Russia, all those foreign countries,
uh-huh.
eh? I'm listening to the radio And that's even before the kids went to school. And I heard the news about Elsie Tate bagging a moose. Apparently it was told by this Pete Hextad. He used to be a big supervisor for CN, like those days. On the tracks, he used to supervise. I think it was from Smithers to Terrace, I think he was. He's a big wheel. Like, he was the one that told someone in Smithers and that they had reported that, eh? First thing I heard in the morning, I think it was 8 o'clock news, I heard this over the air. So how he had reported it was sometimes he used to come all the way from Smithers by speeder, eh, on the CN. So what he had done that day was he left his speeder there. Something had happened, and he got on the train. So he went by train back to Smithers. This is when, you know, he had reported what I did, so that was on the air in those days. While we were living down at Goodridge's ranch. So I guess that's the extent of my hunting. After that, I made up my mind I'm not going to shoot anything. I'm not even a rabbit. You know, I used to hunt for rabbits, grouse, and different things, and squirrels. But after that, I made up my mind, no more of this. Poor little animals, they want to live too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I never bothered with it after that. That's about the only hunting I've ever done. Because as I say, we were never taken up to my grandpa's hunting grounds, eh? I wish they'd have taken us up there. Walter had been there, but Walter didn't like hunting either. He quit that. I think one year what happened was he went out hunting for moose, eh? And he had just started working on the government road. And they charged him for that. the game warden did, eh? That he shouldn't have been hunting because he's on the job and he shouldn't be hunting. Well, this, something like this is not fair at all, eh? Us Indians were told to hunt, you know. We've always hunted for survival, eh?
Uh-huh.
And for to go and either throw some of them in jail and charge them big fines for things like that, they shouldn't do that. This is, we're entitled to this. I think we should go out and hunt whenever, you know, we need it, which I'm sure everybody's doing. I don't think anyone goes out there to waste anything like the big game hunters are doing.
Yeah.
Now, you know, coming back from this little holiday my homemaker had, anyway, coming back all the way from Kamloops, I've seen all these big game hunters passing us by different vehicles, and you see all the antlers up there. I'm sure they're not using the meat. They're just looking for trophies, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And they do it year in and year out. But it's okay for them to do it. And I see sometimes among our own people, there are little children that have hardly anything to eat. And yet, you know, they won't let the people that need it to go out, you know, to take what they need. I don't think they're good to us at all. They are not very good, no. They don't treat us fair, what I see, eh? But, as I say, the big game hunters, oh my, because they can buy their license and, you know, take away all the trophies, it's okay. So, as I say, that's about the extent of my little shooting expedition I've done.
Maybe you can tell me something about their sports days that they used to have around here.
Oh, gee, the sports day they used to have back here at the ball ground. My gosh, that was a big event, another big event we used to have. We used to start parading from Aguilgit about 2-3 hours ahead of time and head towards the ball ground back here. And well, those days we understood it was our ball ground, eh? Now all of a sudden they tell me that it belongs to the white people. I never heard that before. Anyway, we used to have a great time. May 24th is when we used to have the big doings back there. We had to buy all new clothes, all us aggregate kids, you know, and dress up and head for back there hours ahead of time. And this, those days were the days when all these Babin people were here, and all these people from back east were all here. So it used to be great there. I remember Donald Gray used to have a tent. Each store around this area used to have a tent where they'd sell everything, you know, all the goodies from candies, chocolate bars, and Donald Gray used to whip up ice cream, and he used to bring a bunch of it down there too. And quite a few other big tents were there, and they used to have a maypole where us kids used to gather there for to go round and round. Big streamers coming down from a big pole. We used to go round and round and back. And they used to have, everything, you name it, eh? They used to have different games, you know. Sack games and racing and all kinds of different things they used to have. And they used to have many ball teams from all over the country come there to compete, you know, against each other. That was a great big event, you know. We really looked forward to that. As time would be coming, days more to go, we used to count the days. Oh my gosh. I guess those days, well, there was no such thing as TV, or even when we lived in Hegelgut, we didn't even have a radio, eh? Nothing at all. So something like that we really looked forward to. There used to be sports days all over, not just this one in Hegelgut. And we used to go to Morristown for the same thing. And we used to go to Kispiox. And they had all this great days too. And even Glenvow, you know. And then Hazleton. We used to have all these big days. Hazleton used to last for 2 days. And they had all kinds of sports there too. What I really used to love in Hazleton was football. They had, you know, mm-hmm. football, oh my God. Soccer, I guess they call it now. They used to have great players there that we used to go down and watch. Here at Hegelgut here, and we went in for free, eh? Because they figured it was our land, so our piece of ground, so we went in for free. They never charged us. So that was the extent of all our sports days, I guess. Of course, we had our own sports day in Hegelgut, the one I was telling you about, Junior. That lasted for 2-3 days, you know, what went on over there. There were so many things that they put out that you don't even see now. The things that they had made up, you know, like big fish or big whale, they made their own imitations of that, eh? There were so many things they used to make up. Did Dad say anything about that?
No, he never mentioned anything about that.
Oh, I see. They used to make up so many things. And, well, those days, there was a good-sized ground. It was all for that purpose, like in. I think, you know, when a person like Chief Charles ran the place, he thought all this up, is what my mother said. He thought all this up, and he had a big hand in doing all that. You see, you know, like big whales, you know, someone would be under it, like what the Chinese shows does in Vancouver. Uh-huh. Someone would be under it. The big whale they used to have 2 men under to hold it up, like, you know. My gosh. Yeah, the potlatch went on all through the summer. It's just a continuous thing.
Mm-hmm.
People putting up big feasts, and this was the majority of the time when they put up the headstones too, very early, and very late in the fall. They did things like this. There was one feast after another. Sometimes the feast used to go on, take like not just one feast. There would be in a day there used to be sometimes two feasts. You know, of course you know how long that goes on. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
People be doing all the dancing, and people be getting names, you know, or transferring of names. This went on and on all through the summer. Maybe your dad told you about
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
About the book, they are who is to write the book? There's a little part of that book. I think Doug mentioned the coast Indians were the first ones down there years back. Eh? Well, see. Regarding something like that, I've never heard anything like that. I've never heard there were previous inhabitants there, you know, previous to these people that came from Morristown. I've heard of a great granny used to say, now old Enoch, you've heard of old Enoch. Enoch, you know, I never got to know the old boy's last name. Your dad would know him, eh?
Mm-hmm. He probably would.
Enoch lived right in line with the church there, the second house to the right of the church.
Mm-hmm.
He had a smaller size log house. Now, we used to, Walter and I used to call him Grandpa. But he was people of your dad's tribe, Lakyabu or Kitimden, eh?
Yeah.
He was that tribe. But he was a nice man, very tall, dignified looking man. Now, every time that we leave up the hill to go to visit Mrs. Pat Brown, great granny, me and Walter, go to Mrs. Pat Brown, and then to Mrs. George, and then to Lucy, Annie Gangyo's grandma. We used to stop by Grandpa Enoch's house. We knock at the door, there's no answer. So great-granny had a walking cane. She'd knock on the side of his house. Are you all right? He used to answer in another term. He used to say, oh, split out. Split out. That must be Chinook, I guess. Because him and great-granny spoke Chinook, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, split out. So great-granny would say, oh, he's okay. Let's go on. Let's continue on. And we go and do our visiting. And I remember by the time we turned around and head back, well, he's up and around, and we'd stop to chat with him. And great-granny would ask him how he slept and all that. Oh, he would say, I slept pretty good, you know. Either the dogs, he would always say whether the dogs kept him awake or whatever, eh? But great-granny had to check up on him every day. it was done so faithfully, you know. And, you know, isn't it funny? When I was a little girl, we went to, my mother had to put a feast in Morristown. There was a time it got to the point where there weren't very many people in Aglegate. So whoever was the head of our tribe used to say for her to come up to put up a feast in Morristown. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
So this one summer we had a smoked moose meat. Well, they had all kinds of goodies there, smoked deer meat, beaver meat, and they had smoked fish of many kinds that was brought down from the lakes, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Lakes District back east. And it was such a hot summer, we were all eating out on the lawn, the back of the house. We were all eating away, and after we got finished, oh, I got terribly sick. Oh my gosh, I started, you know, heaving, and finally rushed me to the old hospital down here. And old Dr. Wrench was there, and he said, well, it doesn't look very good. If she's going to pull through, I was about 11 or 12 then. If they called the priest right away, Father Godfrey was down there in no time at all. And the Dr. Wrench said, if she's going to pull through, by 12 o'clock everything will be all right. You know, as if to say, okay, by that time, if I'm not going to survive, you know, I'm going to succumb by will, like. So they said I was throwing away all my pillows, and I was so delirious, like.
Uh-huh.
And but I remember the last thing, Father Godfrey standing right by me here and holding my hand. I had ice bag on my head. And my mother was further over and the doctor was there. And somehow or another, I was drifting off into heaven. Eh? The first person I seen up there, oh, it was beautiful. It looked like everything was just drifting above me. Flowers and first person I seen was that old man, Enoch. I've seen him. He had his arms out like that, waiting for me. Like, that's the first person I seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. But it was a beautiful feeling, you know. Before that I had this pain in my head, you know, and throwing up. Oh, you know, it felt terrible, but just at that instant, it seemed everything just disappeared, and I'm drifting up to heaven instead. That I survived that, eh?
Mm-hmm.
After 12 o'clock, apparently, you know, I went through everything okay. A lot of people talk about their experience of going to heaven, and that was my experience of going to heaven. But I can never forget the Enoch. I sure like to know his last name. Maybe your dad remembers.
Did he hear anything about the mining, like at Red Rose or Silver Standard?
We used to go to Silver Standard a lot, and we've even been up Red Rose. Red Rose, that reopened around wartime, eh?
Uh-huh.
And we were up there just, I think it was the last year that they were working up there. I used to love hiking, eh?
Mm-hmm.
We went up there and brought some of the older kids with us, so they'd see, you know, how it's like to be mining, like how it operates and that. So there was a nice man working up there, showed us around,
mm-hmm.
took us right up there on the side hill where they were working. So we seen some of it, you know. No, we didn't go right into the tunnel, like, but we seen how they were operating the tram line and everything like that, hauling the ore down to the bottom there. We were up there to see that. Oh, there were many people up there. People lived, you know, right in the middle of the mountain those days. Like Evelyn and Bert and Omer and Kate, they all lived up there. They raised a lot of their families up there.